Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
A day out at Walmart. As an active job seeker, I understand and appreciate a break from Unemployment Island. This past Thursday, I took the paratransit to Walmart. Now, this store I haven't been to in quite a while, so I felt lost as I looked for the things on my list. I was feeling stressed by the stimuli of the lights, sounds and busyness of the people walking around the store. The first thing I did to help calm my nerves was get some lunch. I stopped by Subway and ordered a $6 special. I had a meatball sub, sour cream and onion chips and a Dr. Pepper to drink. Even though I enjoyed my lunch, I had to eat quickly because my shopping time was limited because of the paratransit service. Once I hit the aisles, I went straight for the electronics department. I had to look for quite a while to find the earphones. After I found them, I went to the back of the store where I thought the pet supplies were. I finally had to ask another customer where the dog shampoo was. I had to walk all the way to the front of the store to find it. I come to find out the layout of the store is completely opposite to the one I go to regularly. The supplies were picked over, and the type of shampoo I wanted wasn't there, so I had to pick some other brand. I went on to pick up some sodas, and I had to call my best friend to ask her what brand she wanted. After I looked around, I found her favourite brand. I couldn't find my favourite at first, but after looking, I found what I wanted. The price was good too. I was ready to grab the last item on my list, cookies. I was happy to find the kind that my best friend and I liked the best. Then I rushed for the checkout. I was lucky to find one line that was not busy. My checkout was speedy. I really wanted to go to the Dollar Tree. I found out that it had been moved to a nearby location, and even though it was in walking distance, I did not feel comfortable walking there because I did not want to miss my ride, plus my hands were full. To help kill my remaining time, I went and got a cookie. I had a very long cab ride home and was happy when I got home later that afternoon. Please note, this article was not sponsored by any of the stores mentioned in my article. Next Stop Please by Barry Hill. Although I prefer to walk to town, I have occasion to get on what has been called by some the peasant wagon, to catch a bus. Some of you might think that this is a straightforward task, and others might think it's an almost impossible one. Well, it's somewhere in between, but no less frustrating at times for that matter. In the majority of cases, there is no fault aimed at the driver, other than a bit of apathy perhaps. The biggest barrier for me to catch a bus is visual. I catch the bus from town to home or to my parents. I know the stop these buses go from, but that doesn't help me much. You see, the bus stops that these buses go from also have buses to other locations. To help you sighted people, there are digital displays telling how long to the bus you want. Then, as the bus comes along the road, you can see the number of the bus. Finally, when the bus is at the stop, there is the number of the bus on the side near the door. It's all there as proud and helpful as a St. John's volunteer at a fete for volunteer ambulance people. Well, actually, not so loud, really. In fact, it's as loud as a St. John's volunteer mime artist. They're much less common and rarely promoted. I have two options. Option one is to rely on the kind members of public that may be waiting at the bus stop too. So far, none of them have had the imaginative malice to tell me the wrong number. I'd probably be quite annoyed at the time if someone did, but I'd be amused later. Option two is to wait until a bus pulls up and ask the driver. There is always option three, I suppose, and that is to get on any bus and just see where it takes me. New horizons and new opportunities, or I could just get lost and have to ring someone to come and pick me up. I'm tempted. Some people might be affronted that, when I stand at a bus stop, I always stand at the front regardless of how many people are in the queue. It is partly because of option two that I do this. The other reason is for practicality. I have a free bus pass, so I'll not be holding up the queue for longer than it takes me to step onto the bus. There is also a slightly selfish reason. I like to get a seat near the front, preferably the one reserved for disabled or elderly people. You know the one. That's the one that young mothers have their kids sat in. This is where the driver's apathy is at fault. OK, I might be a fairly fit youngish man, but I am essentially disabled. I'm disabled by the environment of the bus. A sighted person can quickly glance down the bus and find an empty seat. I have to grope for one, and in doing so tend to grope people's legs if the front seat, the one reserved for disabled people, is taken. So far I've not managed to grope the leg of a film star leading lady or a rich philanthropist. It's embarrassing for both parties, so I get on first. I can't really blame the bus companies for this, can I? Well, actually, I can. In London, other major cities, and, oddly, one route between Leeds and Wakefield, they have talking buses. Now, they're not some bus version of Thomas the Tank Engine or Starlight Express. The buses have a speaker system linked up to satellite so that the bus knows where it is and announces what and where it is in a clear voice. Obviously, it doesn't need to say that it's the number 36 on the inside speakers, and likewise, it doesn't need to say where it is on the outside speaker. Why not have these systems on all buses? Well, that's the rhetorical question I scream every time a bus pulls up at my stop. Now, obviously, I scream it in my head, not out loud. Screaming obscenities at buses is not conducive to getting public help. The reason, as always, is down to expense. Another problem I have catching the bus cannot be solved by these talking bus systems, and that's double parking. If a bus I don't want is waiting at a bus stop letting passengers on, and the bus I do want comes, it will usually park either behind or next to the one at the stop, depending on convenience. When this happens, I rely on my spidey sense to start tingling. Or is it a message from my ghost guide Geronimo? I can't remember. OK, in reality, the only way I will know if my bus is double parked is if a member of the public tells me, or if it has gone way past the time that the bus was due. That's right, I know it's been and gone way after I've missed it. Where the talking bus would really come into its own is, like the train announcements, to let me know what stop I am at so I know where to get off. Still, even on the buses that have these announcements, they don't work because the drivers turn them down. Why do they turn them down? It's because they annoy the passengers. Yep, no kidding. Drivers turn them off because it irritates the passengers. They'd be a little more than irritated if they were to walk or ride a mile in my shoes. I've not been on one of these talking buses, but I've been on plenty of trains with stop announcements, and the only complaint I hear about them is that it's too damned quiet. Until we have a reliable system to announce the stops, I have to rely on the memory of the driver to tell me where I am, or on Geronimo to do so. Challenging the Disability Misconceptions by Amanda Nelson. I vaguely remember receiving my first large print book in school. I felt different. My peers did not understand why I was getting large print, and neither did I. I remember the first magnifier I received. My peers teased me and judged me about the equipment that I was using. Flash forward to college. It was a beautiful day as I was sitting on a bench waiting for the bus, when someone came up and asked if I needed help, all because I was using my white cane. Now let's take a look at this past week. It has been filled with lots of bumps. Bumps of having people judge me all because of my disability. Ever since I heard the words, "You have low vision and that means you are visually impaired because of your nystagmus," I have felt judged about what I can and cannot do. This has made me go back and think about society as a whole. Ever since I've been labelled someone with a visual impairment, I have felt judged by teachers, doctors, my family, and employers, and I feel misunderstood too. Ever since I was little, I was either told, "You're visually impaired enough," or "You're not visually impaired enough." I have also been questioned by people who do not understand my visual impairment. When I was little, my mother had to fight for my right to get my work in large print because, at first, the doctors and teachers thought I would be able to achieve regular classroom work without any problems. However, after I started struggling with accessing regular print, she took me to many specialists who stated I needed large print. I was tested and assessed by how well I could see and achieve daily tasks, and it was decided that I was visually impaired. From that time, I have been judged. It really hurts my feelings when I've set a goal for myself, and then I hear someone say, "How can you? You have low vision." From travelling to setting goals as a writer, I constantly hear people question my abilities. Thousands of people who are blind or have low vision travel or set and achieve goals every day. Why do I have to be any different? I set a goal to receive a standard high school diploma. I met this goal in 2008. I set a goal to attend college and get my degree in journalism and a minor in education. I met this goal in 2013. I set a goal to work for a magazine. Guess what? I achieved that too. Now my goal is to work on my freelancing career, and even though it's been slow, I am achieving it. I have a dream to get a passport one day and to travel abroad. Someday that dream will be achieved. It really hurts me when I hear my family say, "You should be getting more help," when, in reality, I have tried several times to get more help, and with some programs with the level of vision I have, I do not qualify for more help than what I am already receiving. I am doing the best I can. All I ask from society is, before you judge me and my other friends who are visually impaired, see us. See us as people, the qualifications we have, our achievements, not just our disability, not just the cane, or the guide dog, or the braille book that we read. Off the Rails by Barry Hill. Over the years I have, with disabled rail card in hand, enjoyed long distance travel across the length and breadth of this fair and pleasant land by train. Well, I say enjoyed, but that's not wholly accurate. There is a very useful system whereby disabled people can book assistance at train stations to help getting off at the right stop, to help with swapping trains, and to help getting out of the train stations. It's a superb system. When it works. When it doesn't work, it's like a safety net made from spaghetti. It looks like it's going to do the job, but I'm screwed when I find out that it hasn't. I remember one day when I'd booked assistance to get me off the train at Manchester. Now, the announcement on this particular train was too quiet. It was probably keeping the driver awake, so I was very much relying on the assistance to let me know when I'd got to Manchester. When I heard a passenger mention that the next stop was Crewe, which was one or two stops after the one I wanted, I knew the system had failed. Now, Crewe is a relatively busy interchange, but it was a Sunday, and by the time I found some staff to help me, I'd just missed the train going back to where I wanted to be. Bugger. The journey that would have taken me an hour or so took me nearly 3 hours. But that wasn't the worst. One lovely summer's day, several years ago, I had a nightmare journey. It must have been quite a while ago because it was a lovely summer's day up there in the 30s. It was so hot that the power lines above the railways had gone soft and drooped until they became a danger. Our train had to stop outside Burnley. Not in Burnley station, but tantalisingly close enough to be annoying to those passengers who could see how close it was. I was all right. It could have been in the middle of the wilderness for all I knew. Now, you know the train is going to be stopped for quite a long time when the engines are turned off, despite the reassuring announcement from the conductor. And when the engines are turned off, so is the air conditioning. Did I tell you it was up there in the 30s? And we were, essentially, sat in a greenhouse. I think we were there about an hour, but it seemed like a lot longer when you're being casseroled. The train finally limped into Burnley station, where we were told that Thomas was too knackered to take us any further.
The next train with enough puff to get us to our destination would be arriving in 40 minutes. A guard did help me off the train and sat me on a bench, faithfully assuring me that he'd come and get me when my train came in. 45 minutes later, I accosted a member of the public to find me a member of staff. Said staff explained that my train had been and gone, and that the member of staff who faithfully told me he'd be back to help me on my train had also been and gone. Well, gone at least. His shift was over and he'd gone home. The rascal, I thought. The absolute cad. Well, if it was an Enid Blyton book, that's what the translator would have put in place of what I was actually calling the absentee staff. Not to worry, assured the new member of staff. Your next train will be along in half an hour. Would you believe it? Half an hour later, a train turned up, but no member of staff did. Luckily, there was a kind member of the public to hand when the train I suspected was mine was in. Sometimes these kind members of the public turn up just when I need them, like the shopkeeper in Mr. Ben. So despite the efforts of British Rail staff at Burnley Station, I got to my destination several hours later than expected, and probably several pounds lighter from the sauna. I wrote to BR about this incident, asking for a refund, and they sent me a voucher for money off my next train ticket. And it had an expiry date. You've got to admire their gall.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.